What's up, GWA? So, somebody suggested that I make a part two to my first hysterical literature post. And I thought it would be a pretty good idea and a little bit of fun. So, this time I am going to try reading from a medical encyclopedia that I borrowed from a friend of mine. And I just turned to a random page, and ironically enough, I landed on the female orgasm, so I'm going to read it. Well, try to read it to its entirety and see if I can make myself come. Okay. The definition of a woman's orgasm. More than one author has commented on the extensive literature that exists about the female orgasm. It has been discussed from clinical, ethological, philosophical, physiological, psychological, sociological, and typological perspectives. Simmons observed that although the human female orgasm definitely exists, it inspires interest, debate, polemics, ideology, technical manuals, and scientific and popular literature solely because it is so often absent. It is clear that natural selection has not favored females who could orgasm easily. Hence, it is not likely an essential feature of the reproductive process. Even its definition is hard to pin down because enigmatically, it has both nomothetic, the study or study of general laws, or ideographic, individuals' performance aspects. Because the exact neural activity of the cerebral neuronal discharge is so poorly understood, most of those defining orgasm use reported or observed physical changes, usually under muscular or cardiovascular, with an emphasis that this is the culmination or most intense moment of sexual arousal. Levin, Wagner, and Otteson tabled some 13 definitions by authors from a variety of backgrounds, and 20 years later, Mott and Binnick repeated the exercise with a doubling of the author definitions. They divided them into three groups: those primarily a biological perspective, those with a psychological perspective, and those with an integrated biopsychological perspective. The author still had to conclude that a satisfactory universal definition of orgasm could not be accomplished. Considering that the human orgasm is regarded as the ultimate state of ecstatic feeling without recourse to drugs, it is remarkable of how the definitions incorporated the word pleasurable. The more recent reports that women with the complete spinal cord injury can experience orgasm further complicate all-encompassing definition of orgasm. A major problem in defining orgasm is the emphasis that is given to the subject or self-report as opposed to the objective psychological science. Despite all the difficulties, it is powerful to devise at least an operational definition for women's orgasm. Thus, we provide the following. An orgasm in the human female is a veritable, trique, transcendent sensation of intense pleasure, creating an alternated state of consciousness, usually with an initiation accompanied by involuntary rhythmic contractions of the pelvic, striated circumvaginal musculature, often with the concomitant uterine and anal contractions, and myotonia that resolves the sexually induced vasocongestion, sometimes only partially, and myotonia, generally with an induction of well-being and contentment. Typologies of women's orgasm. Intriguingly, typologies of orgasm only exist for women. Those for men have not been explored, even though some therapists have suggested that they exist. Most of the typologies are from self-reported perceptions of women, distinguishing orgasmic sensations induced by clitoral stimulation or ticklish electrical sharp from those obtained by vaginal stimulation, throbbing, deep, soothing, and comfortable. A frequently quoted typology of that is Eisinger, a philosopher with no experience conducting laboratory studies who analyzed the description of orgasms with the limited literature and characterized three. A. Vulva, rhythmic contractions of the vagina activated by either clitoral or coital stimulation. Uterine, no vaginal contractions but accompanied by a apnea and gasping activated during coitus alone. And longitudinal. And largely due to the penile cervix contact. And C, blended, containing elements of both vulva and uterine orgasms activated by coitus and accompanied by apnea. Great play was made about the importance of apnea and especially cervical stimulation. The latter was not so much about stimulation of the cervix per se as its displacement by the thrusting penis, causing the uterus to rub against the peritoneum, claimed by J. Singer and Singer to be a highly sensitive organ. Unfortunately, the total evidence for this typology rests on limited scientific observations obtained in remarkably few individuals. Furthermore, the role of the cervix in a woman's sexual response is unclear. One reviewer declared that depending on the study cited, any position can be supported, whereas a more recent viewer concluded that the evidence for and against a role of the cervix in orgasm is weak, and that observational studies cannot answer the question. Another difficulty with this typology is that, according to Engelmann, Sundberg, the anterior vaginal wall acts like a hammock around the urethra, and during coitus, the penis stretches two of its ligaments that insert around the base of the clitoris, thus effectively stimulating it during thrusting. If this mechanism operates in all penile-vaginal coital penetrations, it would create both uterine and vulval stimuli, or also called blended stimulus. Although claimed that all orgasms in females were physiologically identical, regardless of the source of stimulation, they did not have the instrumentation to obtain detailed muscular recordings for possible differences between clitoral and so-called G-spot, anterior vaginal wall-induced orgasms. There is now some limited psychological laboratory evidence that different patterns of uterine, smooth muscle, and striatic pelvic muscular activity may occur with vaginal anterior wall stimulation, as opposed to clitoral stimulation. One such set of recordings is shown in Levin. The case for such a dual typology may well be more credible by this type of evidence. Boland, Held, Sanderson, and Algren characterized the vaginal muscular contractions at orgasm in their 11 Noparius women into three typologies, which varied greatly in terms of orgasm duration. The typologies were A, that those had regular rhythmic contractions, mean duration of orgasm 13 seconds. Those that had regular contractions with later irregular intervals, mean orgasm duration 50 seconds. Wow. And those that had no regular rhythmic contractions during their orgasm, mean duration of orgasm 24 seconds. The ability to create a muscular typology of such range with those so few participants is premature, but unfortunately no further studies have been reported. There is a need for stimulations, recording of the uterine and vaginal motility at orgasm in a large sample of women. Gender differences in orgasm. Written descriptions / accounts of orgasms by men and women with an obvious gender clues removed could not be differentiated by sex when read by other men and women. This suggests that men and women share common mental experience during orgasm. Four differences in male and female orgasms, however, have been proposed. And like the male, the female can have repeated multiple orgasms separated by very short intervals. B, the female can have an extended orgasm lasting for a long time, so-called status orgasmus. C, there are differences in the recorded pattern of pelvic muscular contractions. Specifically, men have a divided rhythmic pattern not seen in women. And D, once the male orgasm is initiated, its further expression is automatic even if sexual stimulation is stopped. If stimulation is stopped in either... If stimulation is stopped in the middle of either clitoral-induced or vaginal-induced female orgasm, the female orgasm is halted. Why do women have orgasms? It is generally accepted that female orgasms are not essential for reproduction. Any benefit for various aspects of female biology is as of yet unclear. There are a number of explanations from the literature regarding why human female orgasms exist. A, the reward of intense pleasure for acceptable of the danger of coitus, with its possibility of pregnancy and possible of death and childbirth. B, to end coitus. C, resolving pelvic vasal congestion / arousal. D, for resolving vaginal tenting, allows the cervix to enter the seminal pool. E, orgasmic uterine contractions may create a possible sperm upsuck. F, to create arousal in the male by felt vaginal contractions on the penis and cause ejaculation, capturing the semen. G, for inducing lassitude to keep the female horizontal, and thereby reducing seminal flowback. H, because of the difficulty in attaining orgasm, especially coitus. Orgasms act as a Mr. Right indicator and aids the creation of a strong pair bond. I, to create the loss of body injuries and separateness, allowing a merger or fusion with the chosen coital partner. Oh, so many reasons, God. Oh, fuck. To create psychological resistance. To create psychological resuscitation, like an electric shock, redistributing the potentials of the brain. K, to release oxytocin, which affects motility of the uterus and fallopian tubes, and possibly to induce bonding feelings and emotions. L, to release antidiuretic hormone for the possible contraction of uterine musculature and to inhibit urination and delay sperm losses from flowback. I'm just going to skip all of this. The history of the claimed importance of the female orgasm is to... The female orgasm to reproduction is full of speculative functions with little or no scientific data for their support. Orgasmic coitus was said to activate ovulation and close off the womb to air, thus facilitating conception. When it was later shown that the human female orgasm was a spontaneous ovulatory cycle, unconnected with coitus, the disclosure was refocused on the role of uterine orgasmic contractions in the movement of ejaculated spermatozoa through the cervix into the uterus, and then into the fallopian tubes. I, Singer, in the light of this, of his protagonism for his dual typology of female orgasm, published an extensive discussion about fertility in the female orgasm, in which he explored issues of uterine suction, extrauterine factors affecting the mechanics of uterine suction, and the ejaculatory timing of coitus. I.e., ejaculation must occur before orgasm to assist sperm transport. It has often been suggested that uterine suction created by the contractions of the uterus at orgasm would facilitate the transport of spermatozoa into the uterus and then into the fallopian tubes. Evidence now shows the fastest transport of spermatozoa into the human uterus is actually in the sexually unstimulated condition. One essential feature of sexual arousal of the female genitalia is to create the expansion of the vagina, vaginal tenting, and elevation of the... utero-cervix from the posterior vaginal wall. to reduce the possibility of the rapid entry of ejaculated spermatozoa into the uterus. Oh, fuck. Oh, yeah. Yeah. This gives time for the initiation of the of the semen and the capacitation of the spermatozoa to begin, and it reduces the chance of incompetent sperm being too rapidly transported into the fallopian tubes. The female orgasm by dissipating arousal and initiating the resolution of the tensing will in fact allow the earlier entry of the spermatozoa into the cervical canal and their subsequent rapid transportation of the fallopian tubes. Although there is some evidence that the motility of the uterus is reduced after sexual arousal and orgasm. Not experiencing orgasm during coitus may thus have reproductive utility unutilized by previous authors. Oh my god! Oh yes! Oh fuck! Oh my god! Oh god! Oh god. I did this again. Oh gosh. So there you have it. The definition of the female orgasm explained and demonstrated. Oh gosh.